recorded, man.
Yeah, brother, like, dig it. Stop. Right on.
Hour 3, Triple Option with RBKD. Hope y'all are having a great Thursday here in Austin. Texas gets the W. They stay alive in the Big 12 tournament in Oklahoma City. They beat OU 4-1. Tristan Stevens was brilliant. 7 innings. He has just been fantastic this year. I didn't think he was going to be that good of a pitcher. I thought he was good. I just didn't realize he was going to be as consistent as he has been. Aaron Nixon came on, gave them 2 innings, and then it was 3 RBI singles, separate singles, that really was the difference. Texas was able to get, on a wild pitch, able to get an insurance run in the bottom of the 8th inning, which kind of gave them separation. Just does not feel like OU has any juice. I know Skip lost a lot of pitchers, but still, Oklahoma with a rough year. I'll be surprised if they get into the NCAA tournament. I'm Kevin Dunn alongside Rod Babers. We got John Reichel, who is sitting in. We got 2 hours to go. Still plenty of stuff to get to. We're going to get to some Texas football here in a sec, but just wanted to recap kind of what's going on in Oklahoma City. They're done for the day. The weather is bad. I'm surprised, actually, they got this one in, and they didn't have much time. I mean, this thing would have lasted another 30, 45 minutes. They probably were going to have to pull those guys off the field, Rod, because they were already pulling the camera crew from center field, as I mentioned, in the 8th inning because there was lightning, and they saw lightning. So a lot of times they're going to pull them, but they are done for the day. So it's going to be what is usually a slower Friday where you only have 2 games, 2 loser bracket games. It is going to be a full schedule tomorrow starting at 9 a.m.
Yeah, and Texas will play the loser of the Oklahoma State-West Virginia game, so they could end up getting a rematch with West Virginia, whether they like that or not. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing for Texas. I assume it's a good thing. They're a better team than West Virginia, and you would think seeing West Virginia that many times in such a short time span that it'd be advantageous to the team that has the most talent and the team that I think has, you know, more advantages overall. But we'll see. West Virginia's been... they've been peaking at the right time.
They have. I'll give you good news. They won't face Jackson Wolf.
They won't face Jackson Wolf.
Jackson Wolf's been an issue, so yeah. they're not going to face him.
He was a grown man.
138 pitches. You don't see that very often
now. He was a grown man.
Somewhere Gus is smiling with that and thinking, ah, that's nothing.
Yeah, was he 6'7"?
Yeah.
He's tall.
Lefty. Yeah, man. And just did a really good job. Texas struck out 7 times in that loss. They struck out 17 times today in the win, but were able to get enough offense. Mitchell Daly had another error. He said 2 errors in this tournament. I wouldn't worry about that. I've talked about it before, Rod. When you play on the turf as much as Texas does, and then you get to grass, that's one thing. This is actually a good adjustment for them because they're not going to play on grass again, most likely, until they get to Omaha. So that dirt-grass combo can be a little different with hops, and he's had a couple that just ate him up.
Yeah.
But he's good. He's solid defensively. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, in fielding, right? That's, I mean, this team, that's one of their strengths.
980. Yeah, they're fine.
Does it change turf to grass?
Yeah.
I'm talking about the ability to field your fielding prowess.
Absolutely.
It does?
No, it absolutely does.
Does it make it tougher?
It makes it tougher. Usually you're going to get cleaner hops on turf. You're used to playing on it, and all of a sudden you get that dirt.
And it's a dish softer, so it gives a little bit more, that kind of thing? Yeah, is that what it is?
The other thing, too, is this is a really quick infield. Ball flies through this infield. It gets on you quickly, and so I've seen some guys kind of have to make that adjustment where your timing, your internal timing may be used to fielding on turf where you got a little bit, little bit more time.
Interesting, yeah. I hadn't heard anybody bring that up. But they had some clutch hitting, right? There was, Hodo and Ardoin Zubia clutch RBIs when Texas needed it. You had the wild pitch in the 8th, so they got another run out of that. They found a way in a gritty way to get it done. The concern is that, you know, you'd like them to have more quality at-bats. You'd like them to be able to generate and manufacture more offense. And like you said, against elite pitching, which they'll see more and more here down the stretch as you get deeper into the postseason, they have not really been prolific against elite pitching.
No.
They've just been able to grind it out against elite. And that's good because Texas, on their end, they have elite pitching.
Yep.
Right? They have some elite pitching, too. That's one of the strengths. It's the identity of this club. It's their pitching and their fielding. I think if you're any concerned about anything, and this is a very small, minuscule sample size, it would be, you know, whether they can manufacture enough offense, as you've pointed out, against those Friday arms, as you bring up, that they're going to see more and more.
And that going down Friday the closer who's coming in.
Yeah. So, and I brought it up in the first segment of the show. it's, I wouldn't be freaking out about it or anything, but there is a question about how the team responds to pressure. We know this team is really talented. That goes without saying. They had more people honored for the All Big 12 team than any other Texas baseball team since 2005. So they got a ton of talent there. We've seen them play well. They got one of the best resumes in the country. But there have been a few times where they've had to basically respond to pressure, and that's what the postseason is all about. You get deeper and deeper into the season, and it's the postseason. Remember that West Virginia game first. Obviously, the first game of the last series of the season, they had a chance to get a stranglehold on the Big 12 conference title, which they end up having to co-share of anyway. So it's not a big thing, but they had a chance. And within that game, they knew at that time, oh, TCU lost. We have a chance to close out West Virginia and really take the lead in this series, and not just series, but in this conference championship race. And they didn't really do it, but they came back the next two games, and they just put an old biblical-style butt-whipping on West Virginia. Going to your point, you always talk about they're a really resilient club. That's part of their identity, too. First game, though, of the postseason in the Big 12 tournament, they lose, all right, to West Virginia. And against Oklahoma, although they pull out a gritty win, not really a dominant, decisive win. They don't really pull away. So my question would be, what is the version of this team we see when they are under that type of pressure consistently, which is what the postseason is? And when they started the season 0-3, there was a little bit of pressure there too, going up against the elite teams in college baseball, or at least those who were projected to be elite teams. And then coming off of Snovit, there was a lot going on for those young men. So maybe a little bit different. That's why the sample size is so small that we have for this team in a postseason pressure packed environment.
Yeah.
And so far,
and facing elite competition.
Yeah. And it hadn't been stellar. It hadn't been bad. Yeah. It's not bad or anything. They're not terrible, but they haven't been the best version of themselves. We talk about getting to the postseason and peaking at the right time. You like to be peaking. I don't know if they're peaking right now. And I hope they're not plateauing.
Yeah, you hope they're not plateauing.
Hope we haven't seen the best version of it already.
18 innings, and that's all it is. Yeah. But the punch-outs, that is worrisome, because that goes back to that first weekend when we put a lot of that on Snovid with timing and just facing really good arms, and they struck out at a historic rate in that first weekend. Eric Kennedy, Zach Zubia, Mitchell Daly, Cam Williams, Trey Faltini, Siler Sardwan, all punched out twice. Ivan Melendez was 0-for-3 with three punch-outs. And, you know, we get on the olds a lot. You and I are olds.
I'm an old.
The olds and the youngs. How about Wyatt Olds for Oklahoma, who came in to take over for Braden Carmichael? 5 innings pitched, 11 Ks.
Yeah, he got to business.
Yeah,
they don't
want any more of us olds.
He gave
certainly
Texas
not Wyatt
the business. No, he did. That was a great performance. So, but like you said, he's, you know, you're going to see more and more of those pitching performances the deeper you go into the postseason. That's what the postseason is all about. Those are the teams that advance, that have that type of consistency in their bullpens, that type of consistency in their starting rotation.
Yes.
Texas has that, by the way.
They do.
So Texas is expected to be one of those teams.
Texas has depth, and we even saw that today where they're able to pinch hit Murphy Staley. Skip Johnson makes the move on top of that to bring in the righty. So I think Texas depth will be good. One thing we're looking at for Texas football is how deep will this team be? And we saw that Sark had a Houston, for really first time he's gone out and talked to the Texas
public, I believe it's his first public press conference. That's not a press conference. It's his first media availability.
Luncheon, yeah.
That type of thing, right? His first public presentation as the head coach of Texas without a ton of COVID protocols. From what I've heard, they were just, everybody was pretty relaxed, and everybody was close together. It was a lot of people in a room.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's actually had that opportunity yet in a public
I don't think so.
Atmosphere.
Saw him signing footballs. Yeah. And before we get to some of kind of what he said, one funny thing that he was asked was, do Alabama players go to class? Now, that's tricky right there, because you don't want to totally throw them under the bus if they don't. But he said, well, look, there's not much to do in Tuscaloosa. If you've been to Tuscaloosa, the only thing to do is to go to practice and go to class. So, yes, they do go to class. Deft touch there. I like that. He handled that well. But, yeah, you can tell, kind of a looser atmosphere. Texas fans are excited, obviously, with him, but really want to ask him questions. Kind of where is this team right now? Rob, what was your biggest takeaway from kind of either him talking about the depth chart, meritocracy he got into. He doesn't want anyone to feel comfortable. I thought there were actually some nuggets to take away from this.
Yeah, he had a bunch of, I think, really insightful things that we probably can dive into and extrapolate from. The thing that jumped out to me, he talked about the leadership on the team, because I am really curious who the leaders are going to be on the team, because you just lost so much of that. Last year, you lost, you know, obviously, Sam Ehlinger. You lost Sam Cosmi, Joseph Osai, Caden Stearns, Chris Brown, Taquan Graham. There's only one member of the leadership council that came back this year. Of your captains.
Of the captains.
One of your captains, which is Derek Kerstetter. So only one returning captain.
He mentioned Kerstetter.
Yes, of course he did. So he talked about the leaders on the team, and he mentioned Derek Kerstetter, one of the first names he mentioned, actually. Rashawn Johnson, Bijan Robinson, Cade Brewer, Keandre Coburn, Ray Thornton coming in, the LSU transfer.
So that one surprised me the most, and really, that's encouraging.
That's very encouraging that he's coming in already, because you got to lead by example. So that means not only is he doing it on the field, the 15 spring practices they've seen, but also off the field being vocal with the guys. And at that position, linebacker need leadership, because there are a lot of unproven commodities, a lot of uncertainty there. He brought up Josh Thompson. He also brought up Jaron Thompson, Thompson and Thompson, as guys who established themselves as leaders. And he said, of course, the two quarterbacks, Casey Thompson and Hudson Card, both on the leadership council. So that is going to me. I was wondering, who are the guys who have already established themselves? Of course, that leadership is cemented throughout the offseason, because, you know, they have their own private workouts guys, organized 7-on-7s and, film sessions and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, for Sark to already go, no, these are the guys I'm looking at as leaders. Is there anybody that you thought should have been on that list of guys that he mentioned that wasn't? To me, that's more the question.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised that DeMarvion Overshown wasn't mentioned, because he wasn't available in the spring.
That would be so one of the guys, I would want to see him on there.
That's one guy I was like, man, I'd like to see him, but he wasn't available in the spring, so it's hard to... And I think he's going to end up as one of those guys. He's very vocal, too. We all know it about DeMarvion Overshown.
What about Junior Angelou?
That's a good point. Junior Angelou.
You'd be that next guy on the offensive line who's been there for a long time.
Well, Denzel Okafor, remember earlier on in the spring, we have comments from Sark saying that he was the best offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And you're talking about a guy that's a super senior.
Right.
So I wonder why he's not.
He's a Kevin Wattler senior.
Well,
his freshman year, Rob was a junior.
That Bo Skeezy, Jordan Shipley plan.
Exactly.
Huh? That's a good plan to be on. I wish I was on that plan.
Nothing wrong with that plan at all.
I was trying to think of guys that should have been mentioned that wasn't. I'm surprised that Deshaun Jameson wasn't mentioned. It's a senior.
Right.
We all expect him to probably be the best player in the secondary.
Yeah.
You have to pick next year. And Deshaun Jameson wasn't mentioned.
But Jaron Thompson is.
But think about that.
Yeah.
Right?
To me, that says a lot more about what Thompson's doing. Doesn't necessarily mean that Jameson's not stepping up.
I'm not trying to cause any rift or anything. I'm not trying to make up any reason that he would leave these guys off his leadership council or anything. I'm just saying I'm surprised that Deshaun Jameson wasn't mentioned. Maybe Overshown, but he wasn't available. That's about it. I mean, the quarterbacks... Whichever one of those guys wins the job, it's going to be a natural leadership position anyway. So,
yeah.
But I'm with you. John Youngalau, also one I probably would have expected to be on there.
So maybe the biggest note that we got out of this is regarding Jake Smith. And Sark did mention he will be ready to play in the fall, is expected to participate in summer workouts. So, I mean, I wasn't necessarily not thinking that, but I saw Texas fans jump on that and say, we wanted some confirmation that everything's okay there. And I think that really goes back to Jake Smith just being injury prone.
Yeah, I mean, I expected him to be back for fall. So you're right. That's a football note. That is an actual note, not just coach speak. But yeah, I expected him to be back. I mean, what we want to see from all those guys. I don't want to knock on wood, because I don't want to jinx anything. From all the receivers, whether you're talking about Jake Smith, Jordan Whittington, whether you're talking about Tro Miri, now we got to throw him in that category too. We want to see those guys. And I guess Joshua Morris had to deal with a few himself. Stay healthy for the entire season, or at least a majority of it, so that they can be weaponized and utilized to the full extent. We know those guys are great players. Like, everybody's seen what Jake Smith can do. Everybody believes in what Jordan Whittington can do. Jerome Miri ain't even played a damn game, and people are really excited about him. I think all those guys are really good frontline receivers, and I think if all of them are healthy, that passing attack could be deadly because all of them bring different dimensions. Jake Locker. I'm looking at the thing and it says Jake Locker.
I know.
Jake Smith. No. I was just looking at it and it says Jake Locker. But Jake Smith. I think naturally he probably has the best separation in terms of creating separation by his route running. He probably does that better than any other receivers. I like Jordan Whittington's multiplicity in his skill set, can play more than one position. Troy Mears, he's a physical freak of nature. And Joshua Moore, I mean, he's a speed demon.
If
you just get him a free release, it's really hard to be able to keep that guy from blowing the top off a defense. So all of them bring little different, skills and traits that you can utilize as an OC.
I did not mean to Ron Burgundy you there.
No, I know. But Jake Smith's picture is up there, and then
sure
I see
don't
the
type
Jake
anything
Locker.
Bad in here. Yeah, no. Jake Smith's picture is up there. This is actually coming from Mike Roach, though. He said, Sark on the quarterback battle, both probably more athletic than I've dealt with in my career up until Jake Locker. Praises her work ethic, but says 15 spring practices wasn't enough time for one to separate. And he said, quote, when the gut feels right, I'll make the call.
It's going to be the gut call,
huh? My gut has something to do with the portal, too.
Going with the gut. Ooh, I like that. Yeah, well, I'm cool with that.
15 spring practices isn't enough.
No, it's not enough. But I'm cool. I like that he says he's going with his gut. He's not going to go with just, okay, this guy threw the most touchdowns in the practices, this guy threw the least amount of interceptions, this guy. Because I agree, it's going to be a multifactorial decision, right? It's multidimensional, multifaceted. And he's going to have to consider the it quality, right? The intangibles. Who can lead the locker room, right? Which one of those guys has that vocal leadership? Remember, Hudson Carr said he's working on that. Which one of those guys puts in the most work in the film room? I think the two separators between the quarterbacks, and I've been watching film on, both of them, even going back to high school now because there's not enough film on Hudson Card other than the spring game to watch. Hudson Card's arm talent is unbelievable. NFL next level.
It's better than Casey Thompson's.
Oh, yeah. No.
It's not close.
It's actually not even close.
Yes.
Like, it really is. And Hudson Card's got NFL arm talent, and I'm not saying Casey Thompson is a scrub.
No.
His arm talent. He's got a little bit of a rocket, too.
San Antonio.
Yes, no doubt. Exactly. But I think that the X-Man ability for, and I always say X-Man ability for quarterbacks, what separates you, right? What can you do as well, if not better than everybody else? For Hudson Card, it's his arm talent. For Casey Thompson, to me, it's his off-schedule second reaction plays. He's really good when the play breaks down, which happens, I don't know, a third of the time?
A lot.
It's a lot, especially when your offensive line's not great, which at Texas has happened. When
receivers you got questions about?
When your receivers can't get
getting
separation.
Open, yeah.
Ask Sam when he's scrambled more than any other quarterback in college football. All those things. You need a guy to be a great second reaction quarterback, and he's great in terms of his improvisation skills. We saw that even in the spring game a couple of times.
Yeah.
And you saw it in the Alamo Bowl. He's better than that in that aspect in Hudson Card. So if Sark has to make the determination, he's got to consider, okay, does our offense have a higher ceiling with Hudson Card's arm talent, or is it with, the off schedule improvisational second reaction plays of Casey Thompson? Because if my offense isn't clicking all the time, how many opportunities are we going to have on those second reaction plays? Think about how many times Sam Ehlinger had to either scramble or get outside the pocket. It happened a lot.
Felt like more than it didn't.
He scrambled more than any other quarterback in college football when he was here.
Yep.
I'm not saying that's going to be Hudson Card and Casey Thompson, but what if it is? Then you need a guy that's really good when the play breaks down.
Yeah, not everything. You're not going to snap and everything's going to be what you want. You're going to have a lot of off-schedule stuff.
Yes.
Still with this offensive line and still with these receivers.
And I think if Hudson Card improves on that, then he can truly separate from Casey. Because I think Casey's got – but Casey doesn't have the arm talent of Hudson Card.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he doesn't.
All right, we'll get back to some more Texas football. What are you ranting about today?
Oh, I went down a rabbit hole. Okay,
uh-oh.
So if you don't know the name,
is it about gymnast?
No, it's not.
Okay. Are we going to get the gymnast?
No, we'll get it one day.
All right.
People basically.
I'm curious now.
People punked me and deboed me out of my gymnast take.
I know.
I was going to come with a hot gymnastics take, and people basically on the Specs text line shamed me out of it. So now I don't even want to bring up my hot gymnastics take.
Okay.
Make me sound creepy even saying it.
Well, just saying hot gymnastics is what's going on. But yeah, that's creepy.
Yeah, it does sound creepy. All right. So I went down a rabbit hole. Kevin Kelly is the reason I went down this rabbit hole. If you don't know the name Kevin Kelly,
I'm right here.
You know the
it's my middle name.
Is it really?
Kevin Kelly Dunn.
No way.
Yep.
Why didn't I know that? Because KKD?
Because I never told you. Yeah, because people just call me KD.
Wow.
Yeah, KKD.
Is Kevin Kelly like
my
a famous
Irish?
My parents were
one letter off from really screwing me.
Is it like a famous Irish name or something?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It's my mom's maiden name, but it is Irish.
It is Irish.
So that's full Irish all the way through.
Interesting. Yeah. Kevin Kelly Dunn.
Kevin Kelly, the kicker for Penn State.
I'm going to say this. Kevin Kelly is a cool name. And you were a celebrity once. You could have went with the Kevin.
And I wouldn't even say once, but
you were a celebrity.
But yeah, the MTV thing.
You did TV for like 12 years. Years.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Many.
You went from reality TV to sports broadcast TV.
Many. But anyway, Kevin Kelly's better.
You were a star then. Kevin Kelly. Man. Mm. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It's got a Bobby Bones feel to it.
It flows.
Like, that's what Bobby Bones' name ain't Bobby Bones.
No, it's alliteration.
I forgot what the hell his real name is, but Bobby Bones.
It's alliteration.
Yeah. Kevin Kelly.
Mm.
Might have missed a shot.
Yeah, that would have been it. I don't think I would have liked it anymore.
I agree. Kevin Kelly does sound like a guy that's kind of a D-bag.
But wow.
No,
this is really turning around. What are you talking about with this D-bag? This other Kevin Kelly.
All right. See, I'm sorry, Kevin. I'm sorry, Kevin Kelly. I didn't mean it. That was a joke. All right. Kevin Kelly, he is a coach. We'll tell you about it, but I'll tell you why his philosophy and really his dogma overall about football is having a trickle up effect all the way up to the NFL. And then we'll also talk about something that Urban Meyer may be trying to do, and maybe trying to pull the wool over our eyes. We'll get into that too. All that and more in the rant of the day right here on the Triple Option with RBKD right here on 104.9, 101.9 and AM 1260.
As hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
No, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's rant of the day.
Hold on to your butts.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. Time for Rod's rant of the day. A little football theory here. Went down a rabbit hole. Went down a rabbit hole actually starting with the news that Kevin Kelly, no relation to Kevin Kelly Dunn, my good friend and Hollywood celeb A-lister.
Yeah, all right. Now I know you're really greasing it up.
All right. Well, okay. Well,
D-minus Lister at his best.
There you go.
But hey.
No. Back when Real World, when you were on it, dude, the ratings were through the roof.
That's true.
Right? So
that's true.
You were C-list.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Boom.
Thank you.
You could have gotten to the Playboy Mansion easy.
Yeah. Probably could have.
You could have gotten to the Playboy Mansion party.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's how you know you.
Would have had to call Malik, but I would have got in there. He would have had the connections, but I would have got in there.
I think that's what I'm saying. You'd have got in there. So you big time. They wouldn't have let me in.
They wouldn't have let me in
even
either.
They wouldn't let me in there.
Bob Cole texted. He's hilarious. He's like, you used to be a celebrity. Now that was effing hilarious. Bob's dying. I was dying laughing too. So
I used to be a really good athlete. So
man.
You long time. Now, yeah. Did you hear about last week when I couldn't even walk on my ankle?
Yes, what happened?
Dude, I was running.
A dog's deucing in here. You can't walk anymore.
Man, oh yeah, deuce gate was just crazy.
We got deuce gate?
Yeah,
ankle gate?
Dude, I was running, and I run like, I try to run 4 miles a day on the weekdays.
Yeah, you did a good job
with that. I was running, and I was trying to avoid this lady, all right? And I went to the other side of the street where there's no roads or whatever, no sidewalk.
Yeah.
And just misjudged something, turned the ankle. I was like, I'm tough. I'm not some old fuddy-duddy. So
no.
I got like a mile and a half, maybe 2 miles
would
left
you
to
twist
go.
It?
I twisted it
okay.
pretty bad. And I was like, I can sit there and need to call my woman to pick me up.
No.
Or I can be a grown man and just tough it out and run it. So I tough it out and just ran the whole way.
Which is not smart.
Probably wasn't smart.
No.
I sat down here to do a show for 4 hours, really didn't get up. Tried to get up on it, couldn't move. Couldn't put any weight on it at all. I thought it was Bronson.
Your back went out a couple weeks ago.
My back went out a couple weeks ago.
Roger's sitting here and he said, my back's out.
The closer I get to this damn wedding, I'm breaking down.
I know you are.
I think it's something. My body's trying to tell me something.
Yeah, it's time to get married.
before it's done.
If you're totally broken down.
Exactly. I don't think the opposite. I don't think my body's like getting nervous and anxious and my body is trying to tell me that it doesn't want to get married. I think my body's like, no, you need to get mad right now because your body's not going to last.
Maybe tomorrow and then just have the thing in July. Have that just be a party.
Yeah. You by 10 years, you're going to need somebody to help you bathe. Dude. You break it down quickly. It's going to be bad.
Before you get to Kevin Kelly, remember when you twist your ankle when you were a kid? And it would feel broken, and 10 minutes later, you're sprinting.
That's what I thought. I thought I was going to run it off. Coach, run it off, son.
And you
walk
can't
it
even,
off.
You forgot which ankle was even hurt.
That's what I thought I was going to do.
Man, I really thought I broke it, too.
That's what I
thought. That's how bad the pain was, and I couldn't walk, and 10 minutes later, I'm sprinting.
No, that's what I thought.
And another thing is, are you being that nice of a guy that are you trying to make sure white people don't freak out, and that's why you're going to the other side? Is it like old white people?
No, it's COVID mostly. It was COVID stuff. Right. COVID, I was one that guy. Like, I wouldn't just, run by them and give them space. I'd go to the other side of the street to try to be courteous.
Because that's your street, too. Freak them out if that's their issue, okay?
But it's more a COVID thing.
Okay.
Instead of a scaring white people thing.
All right.
Yeah.
I know you.
I try not to scare white people.
I know.
I'm the black gentleman in the neighborhood,
and
as I call
it. I enjoy white people being scared. So you're taking away my pleasure.
My girlfriend who's... Sorry, my fiance, who's white. She goes to these old happy hours in the neighborhood. She tried to describe me to the neighbors, tried to describe her husband or her fiance. And she describes me now, I found out, as the black gentleman who walks around
that
with the two
fantastic
chocolate labs. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, I know that guy.
Oh.
Yeah. I was like, that's interesting why you described me, the black gentleman.
My question is, the other black people in that neighborhood, what comes after black with them, if it's not gentlemen?
No, she said she didn't want to call me the black guy. She was like, but he's the black.
The black gentleman. You are a gentleman, and you are black. So.
I appreciate it. I was like you thank go. You. Well, it was a hell of a compliment. You
she
could just be like
it.
The black man
right.
with the two chocolates. She's like, no, the black gentleman. I like that. Anyway, let's talk about another gentleman. Kevin Kelly.
The black man with the two black labs. What are you talking about?
Chocolate labs.
You
That's
are
how
chocolate.
We do. Here you go. All right, Kevin Kelly. He got a job as the new head coach at Presbyterian College.
This is the extreme guy.
Yes.
Right?
This is a head coach from high school in South Carolina, from Pulaski Academy. He's 26, and his high school record is 216-29-1 in his 18 seasons. There won 9 state titles in Arkansas at Pulaski Academy. His cutting edge revolutionary strategy or tactic is he doesn't punt. And
onside kicks everything, doesn't he?
And he onside kicks everything. And he goes for it on fourth down a ton. Goes for it on two. Basically, yeah, go for two. Go for it on fourth down. No punting. He said he didn't punt unless he was up by 21 points. And if he was up by 21 points, then he would actually kick it off instead of onside kicking. He said he recovered 16% of his onside kicks in his 18 years and converted more than 50% of his fourth down conversions in his 18 seasons. And it led to him having 9 state titles. So he got a job at Presbyterian College, which, by the way, they are the Blue Hose.
Pardon me?
That's their mascot.
Oh, okay.
The Blue Hose.
Blue Hose.
Yeah, we're not talking about Avatar here.
All right.
But it's a Presbyterian school. It's the smallest Division I school by enrollment. And they basically decided in 2017 they weren't going to have football scholarships. They've had 1 draft pick in the last 50 years. And they've had 1 league title in the last 4 decades, and non-scholarship football at the FCS level. So he's got his work cut out for him. But Bill Belichick is actually one of his biggest advocates and one of his biggest fans. Bill Belichick's been following his career forever. And there is some evidence that his philosophy is trickling up to the NFL level. The NFL teams punted an average of 3.7 times per game in 2020. That was the lowest figure in recorded history, ladies and gentlemen. Since 2017, punting has been on a consistent, steady decline, culminating in the 2020 season, where basically teams decided that punting was a pastime. So I'm starting to look at this, and then I saw this story today, too. And I went and looked at other things. I looked at 2-point conversion stories, and teams are now, at least in 2020, attempting more 2-point conversions than ever before. Remember 1994 is when they started two-point conversions. Teams converted between 2018 and 2019 49.4% of their two-point conversions. It was 48% in 2019. It was 50% in 2020. So a lot more teams going for two-point conversions. You had 161 two-point conversions in 2020, 113 in 2019.
So it's that's a hell of a jump. Analytics are telling you it's worth it.
Exactly. The numbers are telling them you got to go for it. No question, right? And Doug Peterson probably really is the one that popularized this movement, especially when he won the Super Bowl in 2017, led the NFL in two-point conversions, also led the NFL in fourth down conversions that year. And teams are now, in 2020, converting more fourth downs than ever before. How about this stat? Teams converted fourth down and one to go 77% of the time in 2020. And they went for it on fourth and one to go 69% of the time. BK would like that. Nice. Last year, 609 fourth down conversions attempted, 276 converted. That's 45%. 2019. 2020, it was actually at 55% conversion rate. Here's a great stat for you. There have been 20 teams that have managed to convert 16 or more fourth downs in a season in the recent tracked NFL history, so as far back as they could go with this stat. All right, that's basically one per game, one fourth down conversion per game, 16 or more. Six of those teams played in 2020. The Las Vegas Raiders, Indianapolis Colts, the Dallas Cowboys, the Arizona Cardinals, the Chicago Bears, and the Cincinnati Bengals. 55% conversion rate now, last time they tracked. So teams are going for it more, and they're more successful. And then I see this news, and it doesn't surprise me at all. Diana Russini does a great job reporting on the NFL. She said Urban Meyer is trying to pull a fast one, ladies and gentlemen. She said there are NFL executives, quote, they think that Urban Meyer purposely brought Tim Tebow in, not only to set the culture, the competitiveness. We know he's a new NFL head coach here trying to set the tone for his culture. But the bigger story, I think, that is the most interesting part of this is that there are those in the league that Urban Meyer brought, believe Urban Meyer brought in Tim Tebow to play quarterback in the Taysom Hill type role, using him in the wildcat we've seen Urban Meyer use in the past. Take a look at all of those different offenses. It actually makes a lot of sense. So he may be on the roster as a tight end, but there may be more to this Tim Tebow experiment than him just playing the quarterback position, end quote. I have probably for the last 10 years, I've said NFL rosters at one point are going to have just a short yardage two-point conversion weapon on their roster. And that's it. That's all he's going to do.
Right.
Like Taysom Hill, but that's all you do for two-point convert. You're on our – now, every now and then, we'll use our offense to do it too, but it's going to be so prevalent to go for it on fourth down and on short yardage and also to go for it for two-point conversions that a Sam Ehlinger – who, and you guys.
Oh, she's thinking of him.
Bam, bam. And Indy. By the way, Indianapolis Colts, they love this. And they actually had Jacoby Brissett in this role last year with the Indianapolis Colts when Phillip Rivers was the quarterback. And he's a little ancient and he's fragile. So you don't want to hurt your quarterback, which is the most valuable piece of your franchise. He's the face of your franchise. But you can take more chances with a quarterback like a Tim Tebow or a Sam Ehlinger in that short yardage role. You don't want Patrick Mahomes doing it because he can get hurt, but you can have someone else doing it. Here's my stat about Sam Ehlinger as to why he could easily be this type of weapon in the NFL. And I truly believe that Frank Reich is going to use him this way. In 2018, the peak of Bam Bam Sam, UT had 44 rushing attempts of third and three or less. Sam had 23 of those. He converted 16 of those to first downs or touchdown, which means he had a 70%, 69.5% conversion rate to be exact, but 70% conversion rate when he rushed the ball on third and three or less. He was the best short yardage red zone weapon in the country in 2018, and it wasn't even close. He can do that in the league.
Yeah.
He can do it. I'm not saying that's all he can do.
You don't think the difference of their size and strength that... Because it's obviously tougher to run in the pros than it is in college.
It is, but man, Bam Bam Sam was unique and elite in that facet of the game.
Right.
And I think you can replicate it at the NFL. If Jacoby Brissett can do it, which Jacoby Brissett did last year.
Sam should be able to do it.
Sam can do it. With the Colts, why? You know why. Why can he do it with the Colts and not everybody else?
Their offensive line.
The offensive line is elite. You know, yeah, that's why.
I know who I'm going at. I'm going behind that left guard.
Exactly. It's like, no, not every offensive line, but if he can do it with the Texas offensive line, he can go with that offensive line. Bam, bam, Sam is coming back, baby.
I like it.
Yeah.
You know who played for Kevin Kelly?
Who did?
Hunter Henry.
Did he? What the hell? Yeah. Are you serious?
Yeah, dead serious. Hunter Henry and then someone else did. There's some other guy. I'll have to look it up. But there's some other NFL guy.
Interesting.
Yeah, who played for him.
Yeah, now I'm going to pay attention to his career because right now, I mean, he's one of the more interesting experiments in football at any level.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. Rod's rant of the day. Get to hornfm.com if you want to check out any of the stuff throughout the day. Up next, we're going to give you a little extra off the record. We're having some fun here with a different show, but this is sports related. Oh, man, the Koepka-DeChambeau rivalry continues, and they're going to add a couple quarterbacks to go with it. We'll tell you up next. Welcome back. Triple Option with RBKD. We're having some funny conversations here during the break. I'm not sure all of them are clean enough to go to the radio.
No, they're not. Some of them, they're not worth it.
Yeah, they're close.
They're close, but we all...
It's dancing the line.
Yeah, thank you, John. We could easily cross the line and lose our jobs. Not worth it.
Nope, not worth it at all. We like the job too much. And one of the things we like about this job is getting into sports stories that are also fun. Now,
this story's awesome.
Your
man.
Fiance...
My fiance.
Mentioned this.
Fiance. Yes. And
mentioned this on the couch.
She did. We were hanging out on the couch. We were actually watching Handmaid's Tale, I believe. You watch Handmaid's Tale?
No.
Great show on Hulu. It's Jumping the Shark is the term?
Jumping the Shark,
It's outliving, I think, the good writing it once had. It's the last season. So
it's been around for a little while?
Yeah, they're mailing it in. Game of Thrones did the same thing. Some people, I think what happens.
Office got bad.
At the end of these great shows, they steal the writers. Like the writers get promotions or the writers get offered other jobs.
Yep.
So all the great writing gets siphoned. So it ends up being like just a shell of itself at the end. But anyway, I digress. So we're sitting there watching it and she says, can you tell me about this Koepka-DeChambeau? What is this?
DeChambeau.
Because it hit her timeline. It hit her Twitter timeline. Like it usually, our Twitter timelines are totally different. She's Bravo, E! Entertainment. She's in that realm. I'm in the sports realm. And every now and then our realms cross. And it did. She said, you got to tell me about this because my timeline is lit up with Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson and Bryson DeChambeau and all these guys and Brooks Koepka too talking trash to one another. Aaron Rodgers too.
Aaron Rodgers, right?
Everybody is in on it.
No, this is fantastic.
It is great.
So if you missed it, we talked about it earlier in the week. Brooks Koepka was being interviewed and Bryson DeChambeau is walking by him. This is at the PGA Championship and these two guys do not like each other and they're ribbing each other and you never know just how far that goes. We have fun. We rib each other on the show all the time, but we're boys and it never gets to that level. These guys truly do not like each other. And so they've got this tournament set up and it's going to be Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, Tom Brady, and also Aaron Rodgers, I believe, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, it should be a lot of fun. And they're going to be, let's see here.
It's Phil and Tom.
That's right. It's Phil and Tom.
Versus Aaron and Bryson DeChambeau.
And DeChambeau, right. But somehow Koepka got thrown into this. He entered the fray, and on Twitter, tweeted Aaron Rodgers and said, sorry, bro. For obviously him having been paired with DeChambeau. DeChambeau responded quickly to Koepka and he said, Koepka, it's nice to be living rent free in your head.
Oh,
dude, this is great.
It is great,
golf,
man.
This rivalry.
I cannot believe golf is getting this. This is so good for golf. It's great.
Now, do you think I get the sense that DeChambeau probably knows it's good for golf and is playing it up, but that Koepka really doesn't like this guy. And maybe he's playing the game, too.
I think they're all playing the game. They're selling the fight, right? It's the match, so they're selling it. Is it going to be pay-per-view? I don't know how they're going to do this thing. Like, is it going to be just on television?
I would think. I don't know.
Because sometimes they do
the
these things.
One was
they did
on
one
TV.
Of these pay-per-view. Like, remember, it was like a Tiger Field thing they did pay-per-view. I don't know how they do it. But either way, they're selling it, and they're doing a good job. Because now I want to watch it, too. But the fact that, you know, Brooks Koepka and DeChambeau are going each other. And Tom Brady is not only the GOAT of football.
So Brady's having some fun with this.
He's the GOAT of trolling. He's going after. He's going hard at Aaron Rodgers.
He really is.
He put up a meme. I mean, describing a meme is kind of sucky, so we won't describe it that much. But he basically takes a shot at Aaron Rodgers and a shot at Bryson DeChambeau via a meme of basically Bryson DeChambeau in the background of the Brooks Koepka interview that went viral.
Right.
That's the meme.
He had a couple more after that.
He did.
So, yeah, the one meme you're talking about, it shows Bryson walking behind Brooks Koepka, that initial interaction that we talked about. and it says Bryson happened to be here. And then in front of Koepka, it says Aaron realizing he has to spend the whole day with Bryson. And that's where Koepka is kind of rolling his eyes. But no, I mean, Brady had a couple others where he even talked about the Packers kicking the field goal.
Yeah, he did.
It was like, all right, we're really getting into stuff now.
Yeah, he said Packers. I think basically the caption was Packers kicking a field goal down 7. And then Aaron Rodgers over Koepka with the look of frustration,
that
of course.
That is fantastic.
He did also, I think it was on Instagram, that Brady put out after they, I guess after the photo was released of the match and the matchups, he put two champions versus a scientist and a Jeopardy host. Dude, he's going hard on him. Brady is a savage. And then Bryson DeChambeau had a nice one. He tweeted out a photo of Brady with a deflated football, basically. And then I think the caption was that at Tom Brady, he said basically that you're going to end up right, more deflated than these footballs. I mean, the caption is at Tom Brady, one, and at Aaron Rodgers, too, when we take you down, yep. Phil Mickelson, you will feel just as deflated as those balls were in the AFC Championship game.
I like Bryson's shade.
That's nice.
He is a weirdo. But
pretty good.
Yeah, this has been good. So this has me fired up to at least watch this. And
Bad blood, man.
Yeah, bad blood, which is good for golf. Golf can get too nice at times, and you need some bad blood. And also, we know Brady talks trash. We've obviously seen that.
He talks trash.
But he usually does a good job of before a game, kind of being real quiet about it and talking it up. During a game, you can see him really mouthing at people.
No, you're right
about
that.
But this is before the match, and it's like, man, we're going to have some fun with it.
They are having fun. They haven't really released the details on when it's going to air, have they? I haven't seen it, really.
I looked for it, and I haven't seen anything. Because I don't know if it's pay-per-view. I don't know when it's going to air.
They're doing a good job of hyping it up. So good for them. I think I'm with you, man. It's good for golf. Golf needs rivals. I always say, and they have two villains. Strangely enough, neither one of these guys is likable. Like Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau, neither one of them is really a likable guy. I mean, both of them are surly, or at least Brooks Koepka is kind of surly. Bryson DeChambeau is
just weird.
He's just eccentric, yes. But, yeah, I mean, so for different reasons, they're unlikable, but they're now starting this rivalry, and I would say villains are good. Villains create conflict. Conflict creates storylines. That's what you need right now for golf. You need storylines. No Tiger. He's out. Phil's storyline has been great.
Yep.
If Phil continues to come back, that'll be awesome. We'll see at the U.S. Open, right? That's the next major for him. So we'll see.
That's his hometown tour.
That's right. It's going to be in San Diego. Which I think he's finished, second in a U.S. Open like 4 or 5 times?
He's gotten really close. Won it, too.
He's been a runner-up. Like, so it's one of those things that I think people will be looking forward to seeing if Phil can win back-to-back majors, which would be a hell of a storyline.
Golf drama. Nothing
golf
better
drama.
Than that and throwing a couple quarterbacks, goats, two all-timers. Goat and an all-timer.
Bruce Koepka is so surly. Remember him dissing Jenna, his woman?
Yes.
When she wanted to kiss him, like during
the wanted to hold hands as their,
and he wouldn't do it.
And the other thing too is like even after he's won a tournament,
he's cold blooded, man.
He is. I can maybe get it walking up to 17 or 18, like, hey, Jenna,
I gotta focus,
look,
girl.
There's a reason we live in that house, okay?
Let me do my job,
and it's the next 2 holes. All right. Once you've won it, though. Like, that's where
it's like, what's going on, man?
Yeah.
Your woman just wants some affection.
And I do think we live in a heavily feminized society now. And I think a lot of that's good, too. I mean, it's not all good, but some of it's good. Bill Maher wrote a great article in Details, like 20 years ago, talking about this. Just
as a politically incorrect stuff.
Oh, man, it was hilarious. Yeah. But in any era, that would be one of those where you get home and get your ass chewed out, and I understand why. It's like, look, we're in public. And you weren't doing your job at that point, hold my damn hand.
Yeah, I agree. It's over.
Yeah.
Just hold my damn hand. That's all I'm asking.
Hold my
I'm not
hand.
Trying to, tongue you down here in public.
No,
I'm just trying to hold your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.